Oh, darling, I'm so glad we're finally married. I can hardly wait until we leave for Niagara Falls.
I can't wait either, John, till we leave for Niagara Falls, but we can't leave right now.
But why, darling?
Why? Don't you know? It's time for the Hector Q. Peabody Show. Very happy that we have a lot of interesting and wonderful listeners. Certainly, it was a good thing.
It's nice to know.
It'd be even better if Hector Q. Peabody would show up once in a while.
It would, but then people would probably stop listening.
I agree with you on that. This is Chuck Shaden.
And Dan McGuire.
And we're here in Hector Q. Peabody's place, as always, I imagine. That guy is really gone. But and when I say that, he is gone.
He's gone.
He
we don't know
gone.
Where.
He is gone so far that... Oh, well, let's play a record, shall we? Joe, have you got something on the turntable? You haven't? Well, then don't play a record. Let's just
play the turntable.
Play the turntable. Put the needle on that on the mat. Okay, go ahead.
Does your mother know you're out? Does she know that I'm about to heal you? Oh my, when I look in your eyes, something tells me that you and I could get together. How's about a little kiss to hear ya? Just a kiss you'll never miss to hear ya. Why do we two keep on wasting time? Ah, Cecilia, come on, say you'll be mine. How's about it?
Well, friends, it's interview time on the Hector Q. Peabody Show, and today we have with us another person whose occupation should prove highly interesting. He's Mr. Franklin Benjamin from East Lakeshore Drive in Chicago. Welcome to the Hector Q. Peabody Show, Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Peabody. I'm glad...
No, Mr. Benjamin. I'm not Mr. Peabody. I'm Chuck. Hector is... Well, I don't know what Hector is, but he's not here at the moment. I'm taking his place. Chuck Shaden is the name.
Well, I'm glad to be here anyway, Mr. Shaden.
Well, Mr. Benjamin, would you like to tell our listeners what your occupation is?
Certainly. I'm a bookmaker.
A bookmaker? You mean you bind books?
No, I don't bind books. I make book.
You make book. You mean you're a producer of books? Then you must be a publisher of some sort, I see. Perhaps a president of some big
publisher. No. I don't make books. I make book.
I'm sorry. I'm a bit confused. You say that you don't make books, you make book?
That's right.
Well, what type of books do you make?
Any kind you want. I'll make book on the horses, the Indianapolis auto races, baseball games, football games, basketball games, hockey games, anything you like.
Oh, I see. You specialize in sports, then.
Well, that's what most people usually make book on. But if you ask me, I'll make book on what time the rain is going to be, on how many jelly beans you can get in a certain size jar, or anything like that.
Say, wait a minute. I'm beginning to understand, Mr. Benjamin. Are you a gambler?
If you want to use that word, yes, I'm a professional gambler. But I prefer to use the term bookmaker myself. It sounds more dignified.
But isn't that sort of thing illegal in this state?
Certainly. It's illegal in every state, except maybe Nevada.
And yet you have the nerve to come here and be interviewed over the air knowing that someone might hear you and phone the police?
Nah, don't be silly. Who would listen to a program like this? I'll give you 8-5 odds. Hector Q. Peabody himself don't even listen. If I thought there was anybody listening, I'd never come here to talk to you. But I had nothing to do today,
no,
so...
No, just a minute. This is a respectable program, and we can't afford to have gangsters running around messing things
Who's
up.
Who's a gangster? I'm just a mild-mannered bookmaker. There's 1,000 guys like me, maybe 1,000,000. All I do is take bets from guys who think they got a sure thing.
But suppose somebody heard me interviewing you and making book on horse racing and baseball games. I mean, the whole reputation of the Hector Q. Peabody show would be ruined.
Quit worrying. I told you, nobody listens to this show. I figured the odds before...
What's that? What's that?
All right, Benjamin, we know you're in there. Open up!
Holy cow, it's the cops. Where's the back exit?
Right over there, but why?
All right, men, break it down.
I'll be seeing you, chum. So long.
Hey, wait a minute. What's going on in here?
All right, men, this way. All right, Mr. Shaden, which way did he go?
Out the back door, but I don't understand.
Boy, we've been looking for that character for a long time. He finally slipped up when he figured that nobody listened to your show. Two of our prowl car boys listen all the time when they're cruising around.
Well, aren't you going to go after him?
No need to. We've got the place surrounded. They'll get him when he leaves by the back door. And you, Mr. Shaden, you and your partner will probably get a reward.
A reward?
Sure. A medal or a plaque or something for holding them here until we arrived. That was pretty tricky.
Well, pretty tricky. Hold him here. A medal. Boy, wait till Hector hears this. Wait till I tell Dan... Why, dingy-dongies, this is okay. Play a record, Joe.
Gather round me, everybody. Gather round me.
Gonna preach some.
Feel a sermon coming on me.
The topic will be sent.
And that's what we're against.
If you wanna hear a story, then settle back and just sit tight while Sister Mitchell starts reviewing their attitude of doing right.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative,
don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
You've got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene.
To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark.
What did they do?
What did they do?
Just when everything looked so dark. Man, they said we'd better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative,
don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
It's time now for another episode in the career of that mastermind private detective, Shamrock Bones, created for radio by Stan Laurel and Molly Goldberg. And now, to relate today's exciting story, here is the brilliant mastermind detective himself, Shamrock Bones.
In my career as a private eye, I've come across cases of minor burglaries and horrible murders. This case would have to be filed about halfway between these two extremes in the missing persons file. It was not as dangerous or heroic an exploit as many that I have undertaken, yet it was one of the most thrilling I have ever encountered. I call it the case of the missing monkey. I was sitting in my office in the basement of Phil Grogan's sideshow. I was glancing through the latest issue of a meteorological magazine called Heavenly Bodies, when there was a knock at my door and a thin, frail man entered. I said, "Come in." He said,
"I am in."
"Sit down, then." I looked this newcomer over and had a sudden impulse to return to my copy of Heavenly Bodies. I put down this impulse, remembering the 3 months back rent I owed Phil Grogan. My guest straightened his maroon and orange tie, settled himself in a chair that outweighed him by 10 pounds, and said,
"Mr. Bones, my name is Quentin P. Quinton."
"And you work at the Amalgamated Door and Window Company as a wire screen inspector?"
"Why, yes, but how did you know?"
"Simple. As a wire screen inspector, your duties would include pressing your nose up against the wire screen of each door or window that comes through your hands in order to see if they can stand similar treatment from children who might be living in the home where they are used."
"Why, correct? Yes. But I still don't see..."
"The tiny crisscrosses left upon the tip of your nose by this procedure left me no doubt as to your occupation. And as the Amalgamated Door and Window Company is the only door and window company in this city, I deduced by a process of elimination that you must work there. Simple, really, when you have a mind trained for such observations."
"That's amazing, Mr. Bones. I'm certainly glad I came to you with my problem."
"Brains are not all I possess, Mr. Quentin. It also takes nerve and daring to be the greatest private detective in the business. And you can believe me when I say I've got guts." "Now, Mr. Quentin, about your problem."
"The name is Quentin, Mr. Bones."
"I thought you said it was Quentin."
"No, that's my first name. If you call me Quentin, there should be no Mr. in front of it. However, if you wish to call me Mr. something, it should be Mr. Quentin. Mr. Quentin P. Quinton, you know? QPQ. My mother always used to say that anyone addressing a letter to me would have to mind his P's and Q's. Of course, you could address me as my co-workers at Amalgamated do, just by calling me QP."
"May I really? All right, QP, you're a doll. But why don't I call you Quint for short?"
"Oh, no, that's incorrect, too. You can't abbreviate my last name. If you call me Quint, you're shortening Quinton, which is my last name, and that's poor etiquette. You should shorten my first name, Quentin, and call me Quent if you like, but not Quint. Heavens, no."
As he spoke, I reached into the bottom drawer of my desk and pulled out a bottle, hoping to sidetrack this ridiculous discourse on what's in a name. I put two glasses on the desk and asked politely, "Have a drink?"
"Oh, yes, thank you."
I measured out 2 1-ounce glassfuls and pushed one his way. As I tossed mine off with what I hoped was a manly nonchalance, he took a tiny sip and then looked at me questioningly.
"I hate to be critical of a free drink, Mr. Bones, but this stuff tastes like ink."
"It is. Red ink. In my business, you can't afford to indulge in liquid which will prevent you from having a clear head at all times. Besides, it's cheap and I haven't had a good case to handle for 3 months."
"But good Lord, man, ink!"
"Go ahead. Drink it. It's good for you. Gives you good red blood."
"Well, all right."
He drained the glass hesitatingly, then smiled faintly. I started to rise in order to catch him when he fainted, but I saw that he had made an effort and recovered himself in time. After a pause, he spoke.
"Well, Mr. Bones, I really must get to the point. The reason I came here was to hire you to find Albert for me."
"Albert is a friend of yours?"
"A very dear friend, Mr. Bones. He's my pet monkey."
"I see."
"Only I don't think of him as a pet anymore. He's been with me so long that I think of him and myself as equals."
"That's logical."
"Yes, sir. For 35 years now, Albert and I have never been apart except when I leave him home and go to work. We go everywhere together, swimming, climbing the monkey bars in the park. Albert even has a tiny set of golf clubs so he can go with me when I golf. Sometimes in the summer, we go to the zoo and Albert makes faces at the other monkeys in their cages. One time he even walked up to the gorilla's cage and spit in the gorilla's eye. He's such a fun-loving little fella. Ah, that little prank of his cost me a $20 fine. But most of all, Albert and I enjoy our evening walks. Every evening, about 8:30, we take a half-hour stroll before going to bed. Sometimes we take a brisk walk along the lakeshore. Sometimes we hike up the big hill on Madison Street. But we never miss our evening stroll. And now with Albert gone, it just doesn't seem the same.
Well, if Albert and you have been together so long, why do you suppose he disappeared?
Well, we had a bit of a quarrel, Albert and I did. You see, a few weeks ago, I began dating a lady named Agnes, who works at Amalgamated, and Albert didn't like it. He didn't say anything at first, but after my 34th date with Agnes, Albert made it very plain that he resented her. Thought she was coming between us, and wanted to know who was more important to me, my lifetime friend or some woman who was probably after my money.
You're not trying to tell me that Albert can talk.
Oh, no. He's smart, but not that smart. But he explained himself by little signs and things, like when he took Agnes' picture off my dressing table and ran a carving knife through it. Oh, he was jealous, all right.
I see. Well, Mr. QP, this sounds as though it will be an interesting case.
You mean you'll do it? You'll find Albert for me?
I'll do my best, but is there any way I can tell Albert from other monkeys who might possibly be roaming the streets?
Oh, you'll know him, all right. If you go within 10 feet of Albert, he'll come up and snuggle against your leg real nice, and then he'll bite you.
Oh.
But you won't let that frighten you off, will you?
If I do, my name's not Shamrock Bones. Remember, I've got guts. Minutes later, after accepting a retainer of 35 cents and a dozen gumballs, I was already in search of Quentin P. Quinton's pet monkey, Albert. I began my search at the zoo, thinking that perhaps Albert had sought the company of his fellows when he parted with his master. I explained my mission to the attendant and described Albert to him. He remembered Albert quite well and showed me the scar on his leg to prove it, but he had not seen him since the last time he had been there with Quentin. So I tried the fruit markets. I went to every fruit market in the city asking if a monkey had been there recently to look over their stock of bananas or coconuts. Once again, I was disappointed. 8 p.m. I had gone since early morning without eating, and so I stopped in a little restaurant and ordered an antipasto and vichyssoise. The proprietor didn't know what antipasto and vichyssoise were, so I ended up with a ham sandwich and a bottle of root beer. But that's what I wanted anyway, so I didn't complain. As I sat there eating my sandwich, I listened with half an ear to the conversation the proprietor was having with a customer at the other end of the counter. Suddenly, I leaped off my stool and ran to face him. Did you say there was a monkey in here last week?
What? Oh, yeah. I was just telling Sam here. This monkey comes in, see, and he climbs up on the counter and starts pointing to the sirloin steak on the menu. So I push him back on the stool and say, "Hey, that there steak is $2.50. You got the dough?" Well, he starts shaking his head yes, and the next thing I know, he jumps on the counter again, runs down to the cash register, pulls out a 10 spot, and starts waving it at me. So I get mad, see? And I go after him and to get the 10 back, but just as I'm about to grab him, he sinks his teeth 3 inches into my arm and runs out the door with my 10 spot.
That was Albert, all right. Did you see where he was headed after he left here?
Sure. He got in Benny Mac's cab and drove off somewhere.
I questioned the proprietor a little longer and learned that Betty Mac usually cruised around that neighborhood looking for fares, so I left the restaurant and began looking for Benny. When I found him, he told me that Albert had gotten into his cab waving the 10 spot and making noises and motions with his hand to indicate that he wished to go to the airport. So Benny had taken him there. When they arrived, Albert got out and handed Benny the 10 spot. As he started to walk away, and Benny asked him if he didn't want his change. Albert came back, but as Benny reached out his hand with the change, Albert waved it aside and took a bite out of Benny's wrist. Then he ran off and disappeared in the crowd. Three hours later, after questioning some of the airport employees, I was back in my office reporting to Quentin P. Quinton on what I had learned.
Well, Shamrock, what have you found out? Where is Albert?
South America.
South America? But how could he be there?
Simple. Took a plane. He stowed away until the plane was in the air. It was a nonstop flight, and when the crew discovered it was too late to do anything about it, so they decided to make him a mascot. Albert didn't go all the way with the plane, though. He got over a place that must have looked familiar to him, so he stole a parachute and jumped.
Oh, poor Albert. Did he make it?
Yes. He got the cords and the parachutes all tangled up, and it didn't open till he was about 1,200 feet down, but he made it. He's probably back with his family in South America by now.
Oh, dear. I'll miss him so. But how can I ever stand those evening walks without Albert? We had such fun together. Au revoir, Albert.
What will you do now that Albert's gone, Mr. Quentin?
There's only one thing I can do, I guess.
I walk alone, because to tell you the truth, I'll be lonely. I don't mind being lonely when my heart tells me you are lonely too. I'll walk alone. They'll ask me why, and I'll tell them I'd rather. There are dreams I must gather, dreams we fashion the night you held me tight. I'll always be near you, wherever you are, each night. In every prayer, if you call, I'll hear you. No matter how far, just close your eyes, and I'll be there. Please walk alone, and send your love and your kisses to guide me. Till you're walking beside me, I'll walk alone. I'll always be near you, wherever you are. In every prayer, if you call, I'll hear you. No matter how far, just close your eyes, and I'll be there. Please walk alone, and send your love and your kisses to guide me. Till you're walking beside me, I'll walk alone.
Well, Hector isn't here, and who cares, and let's close the show.
Our time is just about running out.
Will you give the credits, Dan?
Certainly. Artificial Fruit was the courtesy of Wax Incorporated.
Cover Girls courtesy Front Page Farrell.
Sound by Marconi.
Joe Abrascotta was working the controls and the turntables. This is Chuck Shaden.
And Dan McGuire saying we'll see you again next week.
This has been a CLS production.